Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you. We hope you are having a wonderful Wednesday. And Derek Mason, man, Derek Mason, he's too good to eat an Uncrustable. If you remember yesterday's program, we got sidetracked at the beginning. I learned that Willie Donick has never had an Uncrustable.
Never.
So guess what I did? I brought him one, and he's going to enjoy it live on the air. Derek Mason said—
Wait a minute.
Yes?
Enjoy it?
Yes.
I'm going to try it.
You are going to enjoy it because—
I can't promise that I'm going to—
You are going to enjoy it, unlike Derek Mason. Get this out of here! I'm not eating that! As he opens his bag of Doritos, like he's above eating something that's processed.
I'll do it with you, Willie. It'll be a bonding experience.
Okay. We're gonna sink or swim together.
Mm-mm. No.
Connor is an Uncrustable connoisseur.
If the crust was hard, then yes.
Well, it was frozen when I put it in my lunchbox.
I'm not going to eat some gooey.
It's not gooey.
It looks gooey. Yes, it is. And it's I guarantee you.
You're such a baby.
The bread that covers it isn't thick at all. It's a thin layer. And y'all know how I feel about the middle bread. Don't like it.
That's right. I cannot promise I'm going to enjoy this.
Will you do the honors?
Okay. Why? Yes. Yeah. But let's keep.
Have you prepared yourself for it?
This is a radio show, so let's keep talking while this happens.
Cheers. Here we go.
I thought this was going to feel differently in my hand. Number
See?
One. I thought
See?
That's what she said.
You went there. I didn't.
Connor was going to if I didn't. Connor was going to.
I thought it was
going
to feel more like a Pop-Tart.
And y'all talk about Connor. Y'all are the most juvenile of them all, okay? Especially you to my left.
We established yesterday. You're Beavis and Butthead.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Okay. Go for it, Willie. Here it goes. Down the hatch.
I don't think he likes it too much.
He's digging it.
It's like watching a kid eat broccoli for the first time.
He has to get some water. That's not a good sign.
Uh-oh.
Right there.
Willie doesn't like it.
Yeah, that's not a good sign. It's not a good sign.
I thought we were off to a promising start.
I'm reminded. I told you the story yesterday. My body just started rejecting PB&J in about the third grade because I just every lunch I had peanut butter and jelly, and I got so tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me, I'm flashing back to my cafeteria days at Purchase School in New York.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm disappointed.
I mean, it's okay.
Willie wants to take another bite. And he will, just out of common courtesy, but deep down it's like,
it's also, really, this is a radio show. Like when you give your dog the peanut butter,
yeah,
and then the dog just keeps, he's like, what is this in my mouth? I can't get it out of it.
Oh, man.
Okay. Well, we'll give you a moment to
Tell them what we got today.
Get the peanut butter off of the roof of your mouth. One texter says, Uncrustables are a point of contention with my wife and me. My wife buys them for my two-year-old, mm-hmm. and I hide them because I don't want him eating them. I'll make him a homemade PB&J.
There we go.
If we're having a PB&J in the first place. I'm with D-Mace. Evan says, grape jelly Uncrustables are the absolute best. That's strawberry, by the way.
Am I taking one of Arlo's,
prized possession?
Uncrustables is favorite flavor?
I've got like 60 at home in a big freezer.
So this is like a serious staple at the Vegan House.
Kids
have to be stocked.
This might be the 60? New 1025 60? Civil War.
Yeah. He's got 60.
Did he get it from Costco?
From a big box store.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Everybody's got their strategy.
Yeah. All right. Well, you're continuing to eat it, so I'll take that as a small win. One texter says, Seinfeld 2026, Kramer and Newman start selling their illegal off-brand knockoff called Incrustables. That does sound like something the two of them would do. We will talk about sports today, by the way. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com will join us in roughly 15 minutes. Nothing happening in the NHL right now. Blink and you will miss a major trade. Multiple big trades yesterday. One already today. I don't know if it's been made official, the one between Buffalo and Washington with Alex Tuck.
Washington,
with the sign
Buffalo
and trade.
Working it.
Yes. So there's that. There's a lot going on. We will discuss all of that with Greg Wyshynski coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll get into what the Predators should do in the coming days as well. The first round of the NHL draft is on Friday evening. Nick Suss of the Tennessean will join us at 4:20. To discuss his outside-the-box off-season recommendations for the Tennessee Titans. We talked about one of them yesterday. We'll talk about all of them with Suss during the second hour. Last night, first round of the NBA draft. I don't think there were really any surprises.
No, especially not in the top half of the draft. And I'm sure that's what you're alluding to.
Yes.
I don't think there was a shocker. In regards to, someone predicted to be drafted late first round, second, and he end up in top 15. None of that happened, but it's going to be interesting to see how some of these young guys lead their team. What OKC did to combat Wemby, they went out and got Mara from Michigan because he's 7'4" and agile, and is a hell of a defensive player.
One thing that drives me nuts about the NBA draft is, and I will read directly from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, quote, it's a recurring theme at the NBA draft. Players get to the stage, are given the cap of the team that drafted them, and just about everybody in the room, including the player, knows it's the wrong cap. It happened again multiple times in the first round of the 2026 draft, and it included Milwaukee Bucks pick, former Tennessee Volunteers player Nate Amendt, who donned a Miami Heat cap after he was taken number 13 overall. Everyone understood the pick, part of the massive deal between the Heat and Bucks for Giannis Antetokounmpo and Bobby Portis Jr., was actually Milwaukee's. The Bucks were the team on the phone when Amendt was selected, something he acknowledged on air when he was interviewed right after the selection, and yet photos of the night document Amendt wearing a Heat logo. That always drives me nuts.
Oh, it's so dumb.
We know you're not playing for the Heat. You are officially drafted by the Heat. We all know you're going to Milwaukee. Don't wear the damn Heat hat.
You know where the first ones, Derek, I remember with that, was when Scottie Pippen had the Sonics hat on.
Yes.
That was one of the first times I can recall that whole, because that was all part of it, too. Like, exactly. This pick's going to be traded. He's going to be on the Bulls. But there's a lot of famous pictures of Pippen.
How about the famous picture of Kobe Bryant wearing a Charlotte Hornets hat?
Right, right.
Despite the fact, of course, he never played for the Hornets.
Yeah, and so now it's happening like annually.
Luka Doncic wore an Atlanta Hawks hat.
But this is where it gets confusing. Mm-hmm. Like last night, I was out with some friends and my son and one of his buddies, and his buddy is a huge Tennessee fan. So he wanted to know where Ament was going to go. Uh-huh. So he sees the thing. He was like, oh, this is going to be great. Ament's going to be playing with Giannis on the Heat. This is going to be awesome. Because no. All he was looking at was the thing.
Ticker.
Like, he wasn't reading the story that goes along with it. So it's like, how are you supposed to know who's going where?
I wonder, why is it that the NBA choose to take that route?
Because it's because of the league calendar. Like,
yeah,
like,
I get that.
Trades
but
can't be processed.
Yeah, either fix the calendar or allow the guy that, because that's his moment. Allow the guy to don the cap of the team that he was drafted by, and not the team that traded away, you know, his draft position, so to speak. So, but they're going to continue to do it, and we'll continue.
But
to
if
talk
you're
about
Nate
it.
Ament, and you are documenting at the moment mm-hmm. the greatest night of your life, you have realized your dream. You are going to the NBA, and you are wearing a cap of a team that you will probably never play for, like. Maybe.
There ain't no probably. He's not.
Well, unless maybe late in his career he ends up going to the Heat or something like that. But in the moment, like, let's just all acknowledge what's actually happening. A famous example, as one of our texters points out, Dirk Nowitzki wearing a Bucks hat when he was drafted at the behest of the Dallas Mavericks. Like, it's just a strange thing. Like, go – when you've got a moment, Google Kobe Bryant's draft night picture of Kobe Bryant wearing a Charlotte Hornets hat. Like, it'll take a moment for you to process.
Yeah. Because nobody remembers the details of the trade and everything, because most of them are so confusing you don't understand it.
Only thing they see is the hat. It's like, oh, he got drafted. No, he didn't get drafted by that team. That team traded away the rights to draft him, and so be it. So hopefully one day the NBA fixes it.
One texter says, why is the NBA the only sport that has this problem? Hockey doesn't go through this with basically the same offseason schedule. One texter says, oh, my God, you guys are on this one. So true. I absolutely hate the way the NBA does the draft in that regard. Adjust the owner of that pick before the draft and have them wear the correct hat. It gets too confusing. Yet another thing the NBA does that is dumb, league calendar, be damned. I only notice it in the NBA. Does it happen in other sports?
No.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Okay.
Because you rarely see. No, it never happens.
No, none of the other sports do that.
Mm-mm. I'm trying to think. Football, is there a possibility of it happening? No. I guess it hadn't been.
I can't think of another sport that does this, but it bothers me whenever I watch the NBA draft. One texter has this sent to me, but I think it's a better question for Connor Newt. Hey, Adam, the streak continues for Kentucky for a player getting drafted in the first round. Are you surprised? Are you surprised, Connor Newt?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I am in the minority.
Jaden Quaintance going 20th overall to the Spurs.
I don't claim him. He doesn't count to me.
He played how many games?
Three.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to claim a player who only played three games for your team. He was injured, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got, like, some knee thing. Like, he tore his Achilles the year before, and they paid him $10 million to come play or something like that. That's probably a high example. But regardless, he played three games, so he doesn't count to me.
Okay.
Oh, man. You're harsh.
Shaden Sharp doesn't count either.
Wow.
He played zero games.
By the way, today's word of the day, and it's a good one, I think, Pantheon.
I like it.
Pantheon usually refers to a group of famous or notable people or things, such as Derek Mason is part of the Pantheon of outstanding members of the Tennessee Titans.
All right.
I like it.
How about that?
And so this is not related to the Parthenon.
No.
Don't get it confused.
No, not related to
the just like a quail, yesterday's word. That was not the bird.
Yeah, nor was it Dan.
Not Dan. Now the challenge for you, Adam, is to use Pantheon at some point over the course of the show. Just to remind people of today's word of the day. It's like, you know, we watch Sesame Street, and it's brought to you by the letter A. Like, there's a theme going out through the show. You know? So you gotta bring it into the works again.
How about this? In the pantheon of major NHL trades in recent memory, the Chicago Blackhawks trading the number 4 overall pick for Bo Byram may be one of the worst I can remember. How about that?
That is a trade that's getting all kinds of talk.
Yes. It had been 18 years, by the way. 18 years since an NHL top five draft pick had been traded that close to the draft.
And they did not just trade the fourth pick. They traded other assets to get Bowen Byram, including a second-round pick, a top 50 pick, and a serviceable defenseman in Louis Crevier, who's 6'8", is an interesting guy, if nothing else, and he's still young. So it wasn't even just a straight swap. And Bowen Byram is a very good player that they're banking on becoming a great player, who they're going to have to pay accordingly before he does it. Before he does it. I mean, it could work. But, Adam, I am going to give you the theme of that trade.
Okay.
You and your... You need to break it all the way down, go for the full rebuild. What is happening in Chicago? They're getting impatient. They have stunk for four straight years. They're tired of it. Connor Bedard's tired of it. And so this was one where somebody went to somebody, I don't know if it was the ownership or the ticket sales guy, and said, hey, let's not finish 30th again, okay? We got to speed this up. So Bowen Byram, I think they view as, well, he's already developed. He's a known quantity. We need something right now. We can't keep making these top five picks every year and say, well, in about 3 or 4 years from now, we're going to be really good when these guys go. It doesn't always work.
That is true. It doesn't always work.
Notice I hit a chord over there.
But just because it doesn't work in one place doesn't mean it doesn't work somewhere else.
But yeah, but there's still this notion, I think, of
the Blackhawks, whatever the Blackhawks are doing, don't do that. Like if you're putting together a manual on how to rebuild in the NHL, chapter one, don't do what the Blackhawks are doing, period. End of chapter.
Okay. but there's this notion, I think, of the way to get good is to stink for a long time. And it sometimes it works. Sometimes it works quicker. Sometimes it works after a long time. Sometimes it doesn't work.
So are the odds more toward it not working?
It depends on what you deem as success. Okay. Like right now, the team getting all the pats on the back is San Jose.
Yes.
They still haven't won anything yet. But it does look like they're compiling. I mean, they're doing a really good job of compiling some high, high-end assets. But then the next thing is, like, you don't get to fly a banner, although remember the Predators were notorious for flying banners? Of maybe unnecessarily, like even Nash flew a banner, the tiny banner that he raised to the top of the.
You're picking at old scabs, my friend.
Right. But you don't get banners for having the number one prospect pool. Like you get banners for starting to win stuff, divisions, championships, all that.
Yes.
And the Sharks are still on the ground floor on that.
Well, a good person to discuss all of this with is Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. He'll join us coming up next, 615.
I have finished the Crustable, by the way. It is gone.
Well, you ate it.
It's gone. I ate it.
Uncrustable.
But did you like it?
Uncrustable. No. Not overly.
Back to you, Jack.
It was a five.
615-737.
I respectfully ate it.
1025. If you want to shame Willie for dogging Uncrustables like that, I mean, come on. 615-737-1025. Greg Wyshynski joins us next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com.
This, as we segue into the Puck Daddy here, this could be his generation or close. He may remember this. I know D-Mace does. Mm-hmm. But the theme today is musical themes from sports TV shows, etc. This one,
this
do you remember?
Is classic.
You remember You Make the Call?
Yes, You Make the Call.
During the TV timeout, it would be whatever. IBM presents You Make the Call, and then they do a thing of rules question, and then when you come out of it, if you said blank, you made the right call. And that was the theme.
Do you remember that, Greg?
Do you think I'm 73 years old?
Oh, come on!
Come on!
No, actually, when it comes to sports music, one of the coolest things I ever owned, and I don't know where the hell it is now, it might be in storage, was a multiple CD set of NFL Films music, and it came in a binder that looked like a pigskin. It was awesome.
Yes!
And it was like all the music from inside the NFL and all the highlight packages they used to cut. It was so cool. I really love that thing. I got to find that where that is in my house somewhere.
I just had lots of Jock Jams albums when it comes to sports. But, Greg, there is nothing at all going on in the NHL, so I don't know what we'll discuss. But we'll start with this. We were just talking about it briefly, so let's start with what you called yesterday at ESPN.com, quote, the greatest fleecing in recent NHL history. You were referring to the trade of Bo Byram to the Chicago Blackhawks. So I ask you this question. Are the Chicago Blackhawks okay?
First of all, I should say that I should have said greatest fleecing since Martin Erat for Forsberg.
Now, you're a wrestling fan. That's a cheap pop, my friend. That's a cheap pop on national radio.
Here's the thing. So I was just talking to an NHL team executive, and he made the point, if it had just been the fourth overall pick for Bowen Byram, like maybe you can sell that. He's still not the kind of defenseman you want to give up number four overall to get. I mean, if you're doing that, you're looking for your Victor Hedman, your Petrangelo, your Roman Josi. Like, you're looking for that foundational guy to ante up something that precious. These picks move when you're in the top five. But it didn't stop there. They traded away the 45th pick. They traded away their leading scorer on defense. And all they got back was Jordan Greenway in the deal. And so, like, it is definitely something that in the chattering class of NHL executives is being goofed on, maybe would be the word. Like there are a lot of people really confused as to why the Blackhawks did this. And, I think the ultimate answer is desperation. They have a superstar in Connor Bedard. He's looking around at Utah and the Ducks and the Sharks and all these teams that have been rebuilding around the same time as the Blackhawks. He saw two of them make the playoffs and the Sharks be right on the cusp of making it and will probably make it next year. And meanwhile, his team is, you know, second to last in the league. So the pressure was there to do something, and they did something dumb and earned the D grade that I gave him on their report card yesterday.
Greg, there has been a lot of hand-wringing about the talent drain from Canada to the good old US of A following the Brady Tkachuk trade over the weekend. Is this narrative being overblown, or do you believe the NHL now has an issue it needs to address?
I mean, how do you address it, though? I think the way that it'll be addressed is that some of these Canadian teams are going to have to maybe rethink the way that they build their rosters. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, it used to be that you don't draft a Russian in the first round because you never know when he's going to arrive. Maybe it's now you don't draft an American in the first round because you're pretty sure he's going to leave. You know, like, maybe that's the reality of the situation. Now, in each of the things that have happened recently, there's justification for it. Like, obviously, Quinn Hughes, a team that thinks he wants to go play for a relevant team and be closer to his home in Michigan. Brady Tkachuk's brother plays for the Florida Panthers, you know, so on and so forth. And then you look at like Lane Hutson and Cole Caulfield in Montreal, they're not looking to leave. They love it there and their team is good. So I think ultimately, is it a trend? It's hard to say that it's not based on what we've seen. It may be something that these Canadian teams are going to have to think twice about now.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN is with us. So Brady Tkachuk, as you mentioned, he wanted to go play with his brother, but he had Florida and Vegas reportedly on his approved trade list. Dylan Larkin reportedly has Florida and Vegas on his approved trade list. We were talking about this on Monday, Greg. Nashville as a city, as you know, obviously, has many of the same advantages as a Florida and Vegas. The warm weather, the no state income tax, the low key environment, all of those things. So how quickly do you think Chris McFarland can turn Nashville back into a destination for the NHL's top stars? So when the next Tkachuk or Larkin or Matthews or so on and so forth, when they have, okay, you can only trade me to these three teams and Nashville is one of them.
Ultimately, the answer is how quickly he can turn them back to being a contender. I mean, honestly, like, all of these places have their advantages, for sure. But the bottom line is that Vegas has been to the Cup final now, what, three times?
Yes.
You know, Florida won back-to-back Cups, went to the conference, to the Cup final before that. Dallas has obviously been to the conference final a bunch of times previous to this year. And then you look at, you know, a team that had a tax advantage for a long time, an income tax advantage, which was the Seattle Kraken, and nobody goes there. So, I mean, like, it comes down to whether or not you have the combination of, you know, can I earn more money staying there? Is it a cool place for my family to live or for me to live as a swinging single who wants to do some country karaoke, you know, on a weeknight? But ultimately the real thing is, can I win there? And that's going to be the real key. It doesn't matter. I mean, look, I was thinking about this the other day, boys. If you traveled back in time, say like 11 years, and you saw that one of the biggest stars in the league, Brady Tkachuk, had a trade list that was like, I only want to play in Carolina or Florida, you'd be like, is this guy insane? Like, right. Like, but that's how quickly things can change after you've had a run of success, is that places that don't seem to be destinations all of a sudden become destinations because they had that combination of team success and all the other ancillary stuff that these guys are looking for.
Now, Greg, there's been a lot of trades leading up to the draft, which is Friday. Do you expect that trend to continue, and do you expect that the Predators will be a part of it?
I think they have to be, just because it is such a hot market right now. I think one of the things that we thought would happen has certainly happened, which is that the free agent pool, the unrestricted free agent pool, I should say, being an absolute puddle this year, has forced teams to be creative. And you combine that with the salary cap going up, and now all of a sudden you're in a situation where teams are more willing to trade futures, get guys on long-term deals, maybe have high cap hits, and improve their team that way, because it's the only way they're going to be able to do it. So I do hope the Predators get involved in all of this, because there's clearly teams looking to improve and are willing to deal to make that happen. And I do think that even though a lot of the names that we were looking at are starting to come off the board, there are so many others that, you know, could potentially move. Morgan Rielly, defense for the Toronto Maple Leafs, looks like he could be on the way out. You know, there's a bunch of the goalie carousel has yet to start spinning, you know, whether it's Connor Hellebuck in Winnipeg or Jacob Markstrom in New Jersey or Jordan Binnington with the Blues. Like, there's so much more business that needs to get done. And I imagine a lot of it's going to get done before the draft on Friday night.
We're talking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, and we are setting the table for the draft Friday and all of the frenzy of trades that we're seeing right now as the offseason begins. And Greg, one of the things that we've talked about with regard to the Predators is they've got that hole in the age category of, say, 24 to 28. They're pretty low there. They've got a lot of guys in the 30s, and they've got a lot of guys in the low 20s that they're not sure what they have yet. So I was particularly interested in the Nemitz trade that New Jersey made, and looking at the cost that Calgary spent to try to get a guy that was, you know, a high rated prospect that needed a change of scenery. There's a couple other examples of guys that may or may not be in that mix. What did you think of the price that Calgary paid to get a guy like Nemitz?
It was aggressive, especially for a guy that I don't think wanted to be in Jersey anymore. You know, The first rounders that they traded are probably going to be rather low, barring some calamity with either Vegas or Colorado we're not aware of. But again, to get a guy like that, you've got to give to get. And the thing about Nemec is that I do think he's got upside. I do think that his situation in New Jersey stunted his growth. You know, they really kind of made him an example when things weren't going right. And he probably got scratched a few times when it should have been Luke Hughes that gets scratched. But the problem is that the best player on New Jersey is not named Jack Nemec. So you're not going to scratch Luke Hughes. And so, you know, I think that he kind of got frustrated there and it hurt his growth potential. But, you know, like you said, it's a decent investment. It's the kind of young player you need to target if you want to get better. And if you've got the assets to do it, and Calgary obviously had done an expert job of acquiring draft capital in the last few years and trading a number of their good players, then you got to go there.
We as you can imagine, Greg, and you go on our station every week, so I'm sure you get versions of this question, but also league-wide, this is a big thing. Everybody's always talking about, hey, you don't want to be in the mushy middle. And the Predators clearly are there right now. The question is, what do you do? But a lot of people say, well, you got to go all the way back down so you can go up. But I thought that was kind of my first thought with the Blackhawks trade, is it doesn't always just easily say, well, you finish last for a couple years, you get the high picks, and you're right back in there. Because it looks like there's some frustration to try to move it along quickly in Chicago because it hasn't gone that well.
It's a good point. And I think they're being aggressive for that very reason. I think the problem that I have with the Chicago trade is that it's delusional. Like I said, you know, there's other teams that have rebuilt that are clearly ready to not use their top draft picks anymore to build out their prospect group and could be more aggressive in trading them. The Blackhawks were second to last in the league. Like it's delusional to think that they can't use the fourth overall pick for a player that is going to be part of whatever foundation they're putting under Connor Bedard. The problem is that because they've done such a poor job in developing players around him, and because some of the picks that they've made haven't hit the way they wanted to, they're in a desperation mode and have to make a move like this. So I know what you're saying. Like, it's not a guarantee that if you go down that route of stripping your team that it's going to work. But I mean, more often than not, it has. More often than not, that's how you get your foundational generational players, is through the draft, because they're simply not going to be available to you anyway else.
Speaking of teams that had to wait a long time to get good, Buffalo, who grabs the number 4 pick, they want to win now, right? Now they're like, finally, we got here, we got these young players. Now they have the 4th pick. What are your thoughts on what they might do with that? Will they just grab somebody, or do you think they might shop that around, or if not shop that pick, take some of these other guys that they have in the system that are young, that were pretty high picks in their own right at some point, to try to get the guy that maybe puts them over the top, especially after losing Alex Tuck today?
Yeah, I think they could go either way with it, to be honest with you. I mean, if they use that pick and select a good young center, with potential upside in the NHL, I think that could benefit them just as much as maybe dealing it for some area of need. They're good on the back end. It's one of the reasons that they could afford to trade Byram. Whoever's going to play with Owen Power, they'll be fine there. Their top pairing of Samuelson and Rasmus Dahlin is great. And so I'm intrigued by what they end up doing. Now, obviously, one of the things that's being bandied about is Connor Hellebuck, the multiple Vezina winning goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. He's reportedly not been happy there. I can tell you from conversations I've had with executives in the last week that they're like listening, but I don't think they've gotten to the point of being like, here are the things that we need to make this trade. Now that could maybe change before we get to Friday night. Obviously Buffalo, if they wanted to be aggressive, can really ante up that pick and make a go at it. But to me, when you look at the Sabres and the parts of that team that could really improve, yeah, they have to find a way to replace Alex Tuck's goals, but I think they're also going to have to make, if the opportunity to shore up their goaltending, they have to do it.
Greg, before we let you go, we have a listener question for you, if you don't mind.
Heck yeah.
One texter says, can Greg give us a snapshot of his opinion of what Chris McFarland is going to do? I would definitely think with 30 or so draft picks over the next 3 years and 11 in this draft, I would think the Predators would have done more than just adding Ross Colton by now. Can we expect Jonathan Marchessault to be moved finally, or do we think it'll be more of a trade deadline scenario after McFarland sees what he truly has?
That's a great question. I mean, sometimes the answer is given to you by the market. I mean, like, you need someone to want to trade for someone like Marchessault. I think that there should be a market for him, a guy that has been a playoff hero in the past, to me should be somebody that you'd want to add. And quite frankly, like, maybe Vegas could be in that category, depending on how their offseason goes. But I think when Chris was hired, my first thought was, okay, he's going to have to find a way to clear off some of the veteran money on this cap. He's going to probably, create a base of prospects that they can sort of build around. And then when the time is right, maybe be more aggressive in trying to turn some of those futures into players that can help them now of a certain age. But again, for those who are like, wondering what he's going to do. For those who are concerned about the future of the Predators, this is a really good front office, man. He's put some people in place around him that I've got tons of time for and tons of respect for, and Jamie Langenbrunner and Rob Blake. I think the world of McFarland himself. I think the Preds are in good hands.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. Of course, you can hear him every week with the Chase and Big Joe show. Greg, thank you so much for your time. We'll do this again soon.
Anytime, boys. Thanks.
615-737-1025. We'll continue the conversation coming up next, because I do think what we've seen in the NHL over the past couple of days does present an opportunity for the Predators, and we'll discuss that more in depth coming up next. 1025 The Game will have live coverage of the NHL draft starting Friday at 6 with our very own Willie Donick, Max Herz, and other Predators broadcasters. We will take you through the end of the first round as the Predators currently have the 10th overall pick. Our NHL draft coverage on 1025 The Game is presented by Tennessee Brew Works and the UPS Store in Green Hills.
I think that when you go into an interview, you have to lay out what your plan for the team will be. And I think we're all sort of the mind that Nashville's taken this thing as far as it's going to go. And maybe if everything breaks right and you're healthy, you might be involved in a playoff race and you might even squeeze, you know, be competitive for one round. But really, you don't really see a huge bright future right now for the Nashville Predators. I don't think they want to double down on that. And I think this is probably one of the most exciting things here for Chris McFarland as he takes his job over, is he can recreate it. And the first thing that you need to do is you need to subtract before you can start to add. So I'm really wondering how aggressive Nashville is right out of the gate in starting to rebuild this team. Well, no.
That was friend of the show and longtime collaborator with Greg Wyshynski, our previous guest, Jeff Marek, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. That was Marek talking about the Predators, of course. And this is a question that I was asking myself last night as I was trying to keep up with all of these trades going on in the NHL. Big ones involving a ton of picks and notable players. Should the Predators pounce on this seller's market? Now, I understand that a lot of the players who have been traded in the past couple of days, many of them are younger players. Bo Byram, Jordan Kyrou, Simone Nemitz, William Eklund. The Predators don't have a player in that age group that they're trying to get rid of. They need players of that age group. They need to bring them in. But I think it's clear that quality players are being sold for steep prices. And the Predators have quality players, such as Ryan O'Reilly or Steven Stamkos, so on and so forth. So I feel like we've been under the impression that Chris McFarland isn't going to do anything drastic right out of the gate. As he said, he wants to look under the hood. He wants to see what he has. Maybe he starts next season, sees where things are, and then he moves from there. But Willie, I'm wondering, when you look at how much teams are paying for these players, the free agent market, as Greg described it, is a puddle. There's nobody available in free agency right now that really moves the needle. Should Chris McFarland take advantage of what is clearly a seller's market and try to win big with the quality players he has on his roster?
I think the short answer is you need to be in this game, because the game is happening right now. Every day we're seeing teams making bold moves, and the reason is, as you mentioned, there are really no free agents that are big splashes. What we haven't seen, Adam, is a trade of somebody like O'Reilly or Stamkos or Marchessault, the 30-something guy. We're seeing trades for younger guys.
Right. Alex Tuch is what, 30?
Yes. Okay. And that was basically, he told them he was going to be a free agent.
It was a sign and trade from Buffalo to Washington.
And Washington was able to meet his price, and they just flipped him a third-round pick, it looks like, to get it. So that's a unique trade. Jordan Kyrou is 28, I think, a flawed player who can score. But I think any person I've talked to with St. Louis, he's a little bit frustrating at times, right? He has great games, and at the end of the year, he's got a lot of points, but he's not like a 100-point guy. That was a big haul they got for Jordan Kyrou, but he's 28, and he's got a contract that is probably going to age pretty well when you get down to it, $8.1 million or whatever, when Alex Tuck just signed for $10.5 million. So these are the interesting things of the market changing right before our eyes. So I think for Chris McFarland, the answer is yes. I look at it this way, though. Is there a way to get that middle 20-something guy? Because what the Predators have, they have a lot of prospects. They have a lot of draft picks. And so are they willing to wheel a few of those guys for the right person that would? Because as Barry Trotz said many times, all these picks we have, number one, they're not all going to hit. Number two, you can't sign them all. You can only have 50 people under contract. So when you have all these picks, you have to pick and choose who's going to make it, who's not. So you're better off using some of this stuff to get what you need. So I wonder which direction Chris McFarland will go with all that he has on his plate.
Is it impossible to do both? If the Predators want to take a run at one of these younger players who is reportedly available, they've got the 10th overall pick. They've got a ton of other picks. They've got solid prospects. Why? Or, you know, you could do, for example, what Florida did before acquiring Brady Tkachuk. Florida made a deal with Seattle, got a first round pick, and then used that first round pick in a package for Brady Tkachuk. So why couldn't Chris McFarland, for example, trade Ryan O'Reilly, get that draft capital back, and then use some of that draft capital to go out and get that 24, 25, 26-year-old that the Predators so desperately need? I'm wondering if he could do both. I think he could.
I liken it to this. We're getting back to the whole mushy middle thing. Let's say there's a 15-story building, 15 being Carolina at the top, right? They're winning. They're in the window to win. Those are the top floors. The bottom floor is, let's just put Chicago and some of those teams in there that went for the full rebuild. They wanted to strip it all the way down to the basement. Let's say Nashville is on the 7th to 9th floor, somewhere in that range. The way I'm looking at it for me, if I'm Chris McFarland, and I'm not, is now that they have all these picks, they've done a lot of the dirty work to build the foundation of a good farm system. They've got a lot of draft picks. So do they need to go all the way down to the basement? Could they go back a couple of steps, go down to the 5th floor with the idea that that'll more quickly get them up to the 15th floor? I think that's the nuance that I am curious about. That's why I'm intrigued by the middle 20-something guys that might really be what you need, and you have the assets to go get it, even if it means you're trading. I'm not trading the 10th pick. I'm not doing that. I'm not trading Brady Martin. Definitely not doing that. But could I be talked into a couple of prospects, a couple of future first-round picks for the right guy? Yeah, I'm thinking along those lines.
Let's go to Adam in Portland on our phone line. Adam, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's weird to ask Willie that because, like, he's the voice, man. Like, he can't just be like, yeah, you're rid of him, you know, because he's got to look at these guys, you know. So I don't know.
Get rid of who?
I can say it, though. Like any of them, man. Like all these players. I heard you say March or so. That would be a fantasy, getting rid of him, because I don't think anybody would want that contract. I also thought Palturas couldn't be traded, so I'm sure it's possible, but I think you're going to have to give up a lot as well to just get rid of him. But I would love to see Yossi be moved, man. I know he's not being talked about enough, but, like, if we could figure out a way to do that and convince him it's good to go, that would be awesome. Like, get rid of these older dudes, man, or people who don't produce like that, so... Get younger dudes, faster dudes in there. I love Yossi, but if you can get two good players for him, I would do that.
Thank you, Adam. And quickly, before we go to break, let's focus on this Marchessault comment, because I think under normal circumstances, Adam would be correct. If the Predators were trying to trade Marchessault, they would probably have to make it worth another team's while. Okay, please take this contract off our hands. We'll throw in a top prospect. We'll throw in a second-round pick. Whatever you need to do to take him, take him. But because of how shallow the free agent pool is, I mentioned this the other day. Ross Colton, in another world a couple of years ago, the Avalanche probably would have had to pay the Predators to take him on. We've got a $4 million player here. We need the cap space. We'll throw you an extra pick. Take Colton from us. The Predators paid 2 third-round picks to bring in someone who I would describe at the moment as a distressed asset. So I think there is a team out there that looks at Marchessault. It hasn't worked here, but says, you know what? The wingers on the market, I don't want to overpay for those guys. I know Marchessault has struggled in Nashville, but he's only a few years removed from scoring 40 goals, from being the MVP of the Stanley Cup playoffs and winning the Stanley Cup. $5.5 million for a player of that pedigree seems like a deal. We'll do it. So I do think there is an opportunity there, Willie.
Roman Josi's not getting traded, first of all. Let's just make sure that we know that. As far as the, quote, bad contract, I think, to add to what you're saying with Marchessault, the inhibitor of finding a trade partner with Marchessault is not the contract. It's not even close. With all of the money that's going right now and the cap ceiling shooting up as high as it is, $5.5 million, that's nothing for a guy that still might, if the right fit is there, be a guy that can score you 20, 25 goals. He's worth that easy. But the problem is he's got a no-movement clause. That's the inhibitor. I think he's got to be talked into, hey, we've got some interest with these teams. Would you like a change of scenery? You've got to lay that groundwork. And I'm not sure what's been going on behind the scenes. But you need to redefine the market. Alex Tuch, who is a good player, just signed an 8-year, $10.5 million contract.
Per year, by the way.
Per year. He's 30. It's a new market, people. $5.5 million for Marchessault? That's not that bad. I know he's 35, but hey, that he's got some value. The issue is the no movement clause.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators as the NHL offseason. It's nuts out there. We'll see what happens over the next couple of days. But coming up next, you know, it's June. There are a lot of lists out there. And I saw an interesting college football list that I do want to discuss briefly coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
What's up, everybody? It's Gretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.